Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I am Neil McCready. Russell Johnson is here with me as well. He of RebelGrove.com, Rivals.com. We'll also be joined by former Ole Miss wide receiver Shea Hodge, who is now coaching at Provine. Is that correct?
That is correct.
He's at Provine. So, Russell, we'll catch up with Shea a little bit. We'll get to that in about 25, 30 minutes or so. We'll get to your questions on sort of a mailbag grab sort of a thing on RebelGrove.com. We'll get to those in a moment. First, let me tell you about Billy's Pecans. It's pretty easy this time of year to start thinking about some of your corporate gifting, some of the holidays coming up, tailgates, all of those things. It's kind of a fun time of year. Won't be long before Thanksgiving and then Christmas and all the gifts and all of those things. Start thinking about it now. We'll have a promo coming to you soon. Go to billyspecans.com. Check out the variety of goods that are there because they're fantastic. The cinnamon spice pecans, the toasted pecans, all sorts of different chocolate pecans, whether that's milk chocolate, dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier. If you don't necessarily want pecans, they've got other things as well that include pecans. Southern pecan toffee. They've got the cheese crispies that are just fantastic. Pecan brittle, cinnamon pecan coffee cake, blueberry pecan coffee cake, jellies, sauces, and more there at Billy's Pecans. It's billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and he'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. You get the quote. You can shop it around if you'd like, or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great Ford product, great service after the sale, delivery options, everything. Corey will take great care of you. You can take my word for it. He's been taking great care of me for a while now, and no regrets at all on our part. So 662-257-1900 at the end of your deal. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Soft Verbal Podcast or any of our other family of podcasts. You'll save $500 on your great deal at Clark Ford in Amory. Russell, how are you?
Doing good, doing good. I was planning to make two stops on my way back from Ohio, and neither one of those two materialized. I was going to go to West Virginia, and I was going to see the four-star tight end Brenton Strange, but I was told from several good sources that he plans on staying north for college, and there was really no point to, number one, go to the school, and number two, to do an in-depth interview with him because he really didn't have much to say about Ole Miss. And then I was going to stop in Nashville and see Kane Patterson, the four-star linebacker from, I think it's Christ Presbyterian Academy, who decommitted from Ohio State last month and actually committed to Clemson when I was on the road on my way there yesterday. So it was a pretty eventful day yesterday driving back. There was quite a bit of traffic coming off of Labor Day.
Only experience I've ever had in West Virginia was I drove through the state of West Virginia from – I was leaving Indianapolis, and I had to get to Blacksburg, Virginia. And I drove through the state of West Virginia. Gorgeous. Gorgeous roads. My God, beautiful. Snow-covered. And I stopped in this convenience store in Pax, West Virginia, P-A-X, West Virginia. And there was a gorgeous blonde behind the counter. God, she was beautiful. And then she spoke. And he was like, no, you're killing the fantasy. Stop talking.
But between the way she talked and probably the amount of teeth she may or may not have had.
No, she still had her teeth.
Well, see, then you got that part still.
Yeah, no, she was stunning, and yet I don't think she broke any SAT records. That's going to be my guess from the conversation that I had with her. But that was a long time ago, and maybe things worked out. So who knows? That was, God, man, that was 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, at first I was going to go there on Friday night, and I was going to see Strange play. And I was kind of told, you know, hey, you might not really want to do that. There's no point. And then I was like, okay, I'll just stop by on Monday and maybe we'll grab an interview, do a video or get some quotes or something. And then I was kind of told yesterday that, you know, hey, that might not be important for Ole Miss purposes.
So you did not go through PAX and stop?
No, I did not get to see this probably aged blonde by now. She might be retired, actually.
She's probably in her upper 30s.
Well, she did this retire point. Then.
Maybe early 40s.
She's probably management by this point.
I don't know. Could be. Maybe still running the same place, selling smokes. And there was near a waterfall. I remember that. There was a waterfall nearby, and it was just beautiful land. And just, I don't know. I take that back. I've been to West Virginia more times than that. That was the one time I drove through. I went to Morgantown several times when Pat White was the quarterback at West Virginia.
Pat White, Steve Slayton, man, that was a team back in the day.
Yeah, they were good. I saw them play a few times because Pat was from Daphne.
Oh,
and I was working in Mobile. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
before I was still in I was a football fan at that point. I wasn't really, recruiting wasn't what it is now at all.
You learn all sorts of new things with me, man. I can.
How did a kid from Daphne?
They recruited
West Virginia.
They recruited him.
What, no one else
to
did?
Play quarterback. Everybody else wanted him to play like wide receiver.
Oh, he was one of those before it became such a problem.
Well, with Pat, it was that he was such an athlete, and he was a runner, and yet as a thrower, he was pedestrian as a thrower. But man, he could run that system and beat you with his feet.
Yeah,
and he became a better passer than I think people thought he was going to be. But that was one of those deals where it wasn't a race thing. It was more he could really run. Really run, and people looked at him and thought, you know, this guy could be an NFL wide receiver. Like LSU wanted him to go play wide receiver and play with Jamarcus at the time. So anyway, here's your history lesson.
There you go.
Did a big story on Rich Rodriguez that never saw the light of day. It was good. It's good. Well, the best story I ever wrote about anything was basically this is your life, Rich Rodriguez story, built around him becoming the new head coach at the University of Alabama, which did happen for about 12 hours. And then when he changed his mind, the story never ran. It was the best story I ever wrote.
Who'd they hire instead of Rich Rod?
Nick Saban.
Let's see. I think they may have made the right call there.
Well, Nick Saban, that fell into their lap because they were panicked about Saban and they were going to hire Rodriguez. And then Rodriguez's wife decided that was not for her. Rita Rodriguez has changed the face of college football and the SEC more than any person. I'm serious here. More than any person not named Nick Saban in the last decade.
That's crazy.
Think about it. If Rita Rodriguez gets in the plane that morning in Morgantown and goes, yeah, baby, let's go to Tuscaloosa, roll tide, let's do this. Nick Saban is not the coach at Alabama today. It's a fact.
Wow. Just imagining the repercussions and the things that could have taken place because of that. You could have like a 10-part podcast just on that.
Houston Nutt probably would have won an SEC championship at Ole Miss.
That means I might have had to deal with Houston Nutt.
That's interesting. Yeah, would he still be here? I don't know how long he could have lived off that because his recruiting efforts were still going to go straight to hell. But yeah, it's interesting. If Rita Rodriguez simply says, you know what? I would look good in crimson. I'm not worried about that damn Paul Feinbaum. Let's go. Let's do this. Roll Tide, bitches. If Rita Rodriguez says that, it's a totally different SEC today.
insane.
All right, let's go to the what time is it? It is, as we tape this, it's 11:13, so we'll do about 20 minutes of this, and then we'll get to Shea, and then we'll just see how far we go. Jay Reezy 23 wants to know, who is a highly ranked wide receiver in the 2020 class that you could see signing with Ole Miss?
Well, you had Demas in from Texas at the Ole Miss Texas Tech game last weekend. He was impressed with the offense. He would have been impressed with the offense whether he had come to the game or whether he was watching on TV. So I really don't play that too much of a factor, but for him to say that he could see himself in the Ole Miss offense going forward, that was something to keep note of as time goes on. He did release a top schools list that did not include Ole Miss during the summer, but the top schools list in the class of 2020, those normally don't mean too much. And you've got Troy Amari from Texas as well. He's a four-star receiver I could see Ole Miss getting in on pretty quickly. Javon Baker from McEachern in Georgia. He camped this past summer, and he was impressive. He's about a 6'1". He's a slot guy. He would be pretty good in the Ole Miss offense. Michael Wyman from North Carolina, who is a four-star, who was tried to visit Ole Miss, I think, four or five times based off the junior days and in the summer with the camp circuit. Neither one ended up taking place. I'm not sure how much he still is interested in Ole Miss, but he would obviously be a fit. And then Jackson Smith and Jigba, the Texas receiver who is, again, a slot guy, but he camped the summer after his freshman year of high school. And he and DeZalen Worsham, who's also now a four-star committed to Alabama, both of them really impressed in that camp. But Peeler was going through his first camp circuit as a SEC wide receivers coach, so he wasn't exactly ready to pull the trigger on a bunch of kids going into their sophomore year of high school.
All right, EA Fins Up wants to know, is Sam Williams' recruitment shut down?
No. Sam will take his official visit next weekend for the Alabama game, but currently his recruitment is not shut down. He does plan on taking another official visit, which will likely be to Florida Atlantic. So, I mean, if you think Lane Kiffin and the team you saw play against Oklahoma last week are real factor, I guess, in his recruitment, then you could say it's not shut down. But, I mean, based off of everything that Sam says and does, his recruitment shut down. But in my opinion, with someone's recruitment being shut down, that means that they're not taking other visits. They're not listening to other schools. And you can't exactly say that about Williams yet.
He also wants to know about the percentage of flipping turnage. I think that probably means he means getting him to switch a commitment.
Yes, that is exactly what
he means. Not actually flipping him.
I couldn't flip turnage if I tried. In terms of, like, literally picking him up.
Well, you would need some sort of a catapult or something. You'd have to come up with some sort of a machination to pull that off.
Yeah, but I don't think it would be that difficult and that not unforeseeable for Turnage to flip to Ole Miss. I would give it, I'd say, between 40 to 49%.
What about Eric Gray? And how soon on Eric Gray?
See, everybody wants these things to take place, and they want them to take place now.
I want them right. I want it right damn now is what I want.
If they want it right damn now, and these kids, they kind of, especially Eric Gray, he wants to see the offense. Was he impressed by Scotty Phillips last week and the ability for Ole Miss to run the ball? Yes, he was. But that was one game. They still have to play 11 more. And if they were able to overturn that bowl ban, possibly another. But Eric Gray.
Do you know something about an appeal?
I do not.
Okay.
Do you?
As of Monday afternoon, there was no news.
No, there's probably going to be. I don't know the timetable on that, just like you don't.
Well, there will eventually be news.
Yeah, there has to be.
Yeah.
Especially with the unofficial visitor restriction, there are several conspiracy theories that it's going to come out next Friday, which would take place right before the Alabama game, which would then completely flip the thought process and the ability for Ole Miss to get several kids on campus for unofficial visits. But back to Eric Gray, I placed it at about a 55%. In terms of a timing standpoint, I would say sometime between now and December, but it's not going to be as soon as you'd hope it would be, especially with the running back situation the way it is. Gray is a critical piece to this class.
All right. Who wins, Oak Grove or Hattiesburg? And why is Plumlee's going to Georgia with Fromm and Fields there. Why is – okay, never mind.
Plumlee. Plumlee's the quarterback at Oak Grove.
He spelled it plumless.
Yeah. You know, some of these – we have former –
maybe that's a play on words.
We have former Spirit subscribers on our site. You have to remember that.
Yeah, plumless would sort of imply that he doesn't have guts. Except he wouldn't be talking about guts. He'd be talking about something else.
Yeah, he's currently committed to the University of Georgia as a quote-unquote quarterback.
I'll answer the second part of this question.
Yeah.
Please. Elite players are not scared of other elite players.
Right.
Elite players believe – this is what people always ask this, and it's an easy answer, and I get why fans ask it. It's a great question. Why, Neil or Russell or whoever, why does elite five-star linebacker Joe Smith go to Alabama when they already have 17 elite five-star linebackers, when elite five-star linebacker Joe Smith could go to State U where they don't have any? Well, because – while your scenario makes sense, two things. He's a kid, and B, he thinks he's better than the other 17. And until he gets there and sees that he's not, he is. And by the time he gets there to see that he's not, he's already signed.
Yeah, and another dynamic with Plumlee's situation is the fact that he's probably not a quarterback at the next level, which kind of throws a wrench into things in terms of him and his recruitment. But all things being said with that, Georgia has him committed on their board as a quarterback. And unless they find some walk-on in the state of Georgia that they just fall in love with, then Plumlee will play quarterback. He'll be likely the – what would he be? Because Fromm will be a junior next year. Fields will be a sophomore. And then they've got some walk-ons. So he'll probably be the third-string quarterback next year. But he also could, if he wanted to see the field, he could line up at slot receiver. I mean, he's a really explosive kid. Or he could play DB, but if, you know, Georgia ever needed that from a depth standpoint. In terms of the Oak Grove-Hattiesburg game, that is a game I really wish I could go to. I don't know exactly. I think that might be this weekend. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I know Oxford and Lafayette play this weekend, and that's going to be a mauling.
Whoa. Whoa.
You don't think so?
Here's what I know. I know that when the Chargerettes get through breaking out that spirit, when they get through doing their dance at halftime and you can feel that Charger spirit emanate through the stadium, things are going to get real. That's what I can promise you. I don't think it, Russell. I know it. I've seen Chargerette spirit. I know how hard they've worked. I know how much they've prepared. Sweated, blisters, everything. I'm telling you, third quarter Friday night, going to be a different deal.
You know if Oxford's wearing those black uniforms again?
I don't have any idea. I know that the pom-poms are blue and yellow, and that yellow is vibrant. And that blue restores your soul. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a game. Those Commodores have the Commodorettes. They're going to get their asses kicked. They have absolutely no idea what's coming for them Friday night. I'll tell you what's coming. Spirit. Spirit is coming.
Well, that is good. That is reassuring. Back to the football game, you know, Pegues is going to have, I would say, four or five touchdowns for Oxford to really be able to compete with Lafayette and Turnage, Anderson, and there's several former Oxford players now eligible at Lafayette, so it'll be interesting to see.
Can Turnage do a kick?
Can he kick?
Yeah, can he kick?
Like the
in a damn line, can he kick and keep a rhythm? I bet he can't.
I bet he can. I don't know though. I mean, probably not as well as the Chargerettes.
Can he like do the plie and stuff? No.
No. Probably not.
So what you're saying is, if it comes down to a dance off,
Oxford will win.
Chargerettes beat Brandon Turnage.
That's right.
Brandon Turnage cannot dance off with the Chargerettes.
Yes, he would lose.
If he wants to, I can set that up.
I'll let him know.
Yeah, you tell him.
Now, in terms of the Oak Grove-Hattiesburg game, Hattiesburg's going to win that game. Oak Grove's wide receiver still recovering. Well, not recovering. He's still rehabbing his torn ACL. And 2020 athlete from there has really started to emerge, but I don't really see that playing as much of a role as I do the Hattiesburg defense. Kind of as things have gone on and they've gotten more familiar with their personnel, transfers Hakeem Vance and Jaron Handy have both really started to become better acclimated with the defense and the schemes that the head coach Tony Vance has started to run. And then on offense with Tony Con- – not Tony Connor. Oh, good.
He's out of eligibility. Breaking.
Snoop Connor. Snoop Connor and his overall athleticism.
I covered a Snoop once. Snoop Brazzle.
South Panola, right?
Oh, yes.
South Panola is another team that they're really starting to kind of get their gears going again, but watching them the first 2 weeks, they looked piss poor. I mean, lining up against Clinton, I mean, that was at least a battle because Clinton was so unaggressive and conservative with their play calling that South Panola was kept in the game with Janari Dean and the quarterback they have there. But as time went on, you know, South Panola just got worn down. And then against Brandon week two, it just wasn't close.
Levi 275 wants to know, Russell, will Ole Miss take another quarterback in the 2019 recruiting cycle?
Will they?
Yes, that's what he says. Will they?
That is still unsure. Should they? Abso-frickin-lutely. You don't want to go into next year, kind of as he said on the second part of his question, you don't want to go into the 2019 season with two scholarship quarterbacks, whether that be Corral and Tisdale, Corral and KJ Jefferson, Corral and Lance Legendary, any of the three. You don't want to go into that season next season with just that. Because number one, Corral hasn't proved himself. He hasn't even appeared in a game. As we talked about last week, you know, will he play in the game? And they were like, and Coach Luke said, you know, it's possible, but, you know, you didn't want him to play. You know, Tamu didn't get hurt. Excuse my enunciation of his last name if it's incorrect. But with that, you know, Jordan didn't get hurt, so Corral didn't play. And it's going to be that way. I would expect Corral to get some reps or somebody other than Jordan to get some reps this week, assuming things get out of hand at some point. But other than that, I mean, you've got JUCO quarterbacks all over the state of Mississippi who have really begun to emerge. Messiah DeWeaver from East Mississippi was extremely impressive in his week one performance, and he will be playing Pearl River this weekend, and that'll be a little bit more of a test for East Mississippi. I'm not quite sure how close that game will be. I know the East game last week was over probably around the end of the first quarter. So a long-winded answer for an easy question, will Ole Miss take another quarterback? I'm not sure if they're going to. It depends on who the offensive coordinator is. It depends on who the receiver coach is. It depends on what off-the-field guys are now on-the-field guys. It depends on all of those things and what they expect from their quarterback situation.
In my attempt to distract you, I have turned on the Red Sox-Braves game. Since you rolled your eyes at my Chargerette assessment. All right, here we go. We're gonna get to Shea Hodge in just a minute. Not surprisingly, you asked for a mailbag, and C. Strand responded with 7,000 posts within 6 seconds. So we're going to hit them all. Here we go. Excluding Dean and Hall, who are some other linebacker targets Ole Miss has a shot at?
Did Acuna already hit a homer?
Either that or he just decided to have kind of a celebratory jog in the outfield.
He is so much fun to watch. Sorry about that.
Superstar.
Linebacker targets at Ole Miss. Oh, this is actually important. Linebacker targets at Ole Miss. You know, it's not every day you see a position as critical as a linebacker have so few targets. You've got Jamie Pettway from Georgia. You've got Kashun Brown, another linebacker who no one really talks about, and he doesn't really talk to the media much, so you can't get much of a stance on where things stand with him. You've got David Gabenda from Texas, who's going to end up at Texas. And then you've got the wild card, Levante Bentley, whose status may end up in the air now that Clemson has Kane Patterson.
Do you think Chris Bogle leaves the state of Florida for college?
Currently, I do. I know he visited Florida State this past weekend, and I know that Miami is the presumed favorite from everybody. But with that being said, Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Auburn are all squarely in the mix. I would say that both Tennessee and Ole Miss are currently on top. in terms of an out-of-state standpoint. And then you've got Miami, Florida State, and maybe Florida ends up back in the mix. I don't know. Something that has been shocking to me in the state of Florida, which Rob Cassidy talked about when he was on here a few weeks ago, is the fact that Florida is trending positively for so many top national guys, but they're not trending positively for the top in-state guys. And whether or not that becomes a trend or it starts to upset high school coaches in the state, which you never want to do, especially in a state as talented as Florida, that's going to be interesting to see as it develops.
Which commitments are the most solid and which are the most precarious to flip?
See, this is where you get to a lot of he said, she said, sourcing, high school coaches getting upset about certain things. You get a lot of that. And with Tupelo naturally being a Mississippi State school, you've always got to wonder about Jordan Jernigan and Tay Standifer. Surely Standifer is as solid as can be, being that he's not on the field this season and won't be this season. And Jernigan struggled with his own little injury as of late, although he was – able to play on Friday, but he didn't show up on the box score, so I'm not exactly sure what happened with that. But with those two, you always have to worry about Mississippi State coming in and flipping them, whether it be on the early signing day or, you know, the weeks leading up. I do expect them both to take official visits. And then currently, the way everything is constructed, Grant Tisdale and DeAndre Prince are the two strongest commitments on the list.
All right, we're going to take a break from the questions. We're going to get to Shea Hodge in a minute. First, let me tell you, this podcast is also brought to you by Lentz and Little. Lentz and Little, PA, is Central and South Mississippi's law firm you want to hire for business advice and commercial litigation. Whether you're having trouble paying your debts or someone isn't paying you what they agreed to pay, Lentz and Little can quickly advise you of your best course of action. Lentz and Little has more than 60 years of collective experience representing companies and individuals in defaulted loan workouts, collections, repossessions, and foreclosures, representing banks as well as companies having financial difficulties. Lentz and Little offers creative solutions to financial problems. Attorneys at Lentz and Little have the versatility you need, regardless of whether you need help with general business advice, issues with payment of taxes, or representation in state court, federal court, or bankruptcy court. If you're in need of advice or assistance with your financial situation, call Jarrett Little at 228-867-6050. Visit their website at lentzlittle.com. That's L-E-N-T-Z little.com. Or email Jarrett at lentzlittle.com. Now, Shea Hodge on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
I'm joined by former Ole Miss wide receiver and current Provine offensive coordinator Shea Hodge on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. What's going on, Shea?
Nothing much, man. Just sitting around getting ready for the game Friday.
Who do you guys got this week?
We have Lanier Bulldogs.
Now you are, what, 2 or 3 weeks into your high school coaching career?
That'll be my third week. We had a bye week the second week, so yeah, this will be my third game.
What have been your main takeaways so far? I mean, I'm sure you're learning probably about a mile a minute.
Yeah, man. What I'm learning so far, what I've learned so far is just the coaching modes of it, man. Learning what to call and what downs, and just the difference from being a player and a coach to seeing it from a different perspective. How you can dictate certain things when you play. But when you're coaching, you got to depend on kids to do it. So that's a big difference in from what I thought would happen with coaching rather than playing.
Now, obviously, you're enjoying coaching, and you did a little bit of that in the off season. But kind of talk about how the Provine opportunity came about, and if any other options were on the table.
Oh, I have to say the offer came about because of my 7-on-7 coaching that I've done this summer, well, last summer and the summer before. A couple of people seen me do that, and you know, and they just wanted me to control their offense, man. I got an offer from Provine. I got an offer from Newton. I had also an offer from, I'm going blank right now, but I had one more offer. And I just kind of evaluated, you know, the talent and the teams, and I just chose Provine. I think I had a I would have a bigger role here and impact more kids here.
Especially in the Jackson public school systems, I'm sure that was that played a role in your decision.
Oh yeah, that was a big factor in it, because I always hear they need more guidance, and you know, trying to turn them from the streets and seeing that it's a different way to make it. You know, that was a big thing in picking him also.
Now we're going to get into some questions from our subscribers at rebelgrove.com. I kind of we'll dive into the Jackson Public Schools question. For a city as large as Jackson is, it seems like they produce so few D1 caliber prospects, at least those that, you know, qualify academically. Well, is there anything that can be done to fix that, or do you think that's just a product of the system in JPS?
I would kind of say it's a product of its environment. Just being over there and comparing a 6A school to, say, where I came from, Morton, they have just as many or less resources than we had at Morton compared to some of the other schools I went to, like Mass and Central with my best friend Mike Esme. Just seeing the weight room and the resources that they have, like money-wise, and, you know, being able to, like, uniforms, like, it's some small stuff, you know, that motivates kids to want to do more and want to come out and play, you know, because there's a lot of kids that's in the buildings that are not playing football, like offensive linemen at Provine. We only have probably like 7 at a 6A school, and I remember being in high school, we had like 12, maybe 15 offensive linemen in just a 3A school. So I more or less think it's the resources that those kids are put up against. Also, I feel like they kind of grow up too fast in Jackson. You know, they get introduced to the street life a little bit too fast, seeing things that they shouldn't see. You know, maybe they're in a one-parent home or a mom working 2-3 jobs where they haven't, like, seen for themselves and get themselves, you know, ready for school and et cetera. It's just a little bit different from coming from a smaller town or a town with more money, more resources, more things to do. You know, I think that more or less weighs on it, too. Some of them get caught by the wayside with saying, like, they'll turn to the streets rather than want to play ball. That's a part of, like, why that many people don't come out, in my opinion. And overall, man, I just think it's the resources. I just think that where it's located, poverty around, you know, a lot around in Jackson, and, you know, I just think that takes away from a lot of the kids wanting to come play ball and be D1 athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely agree with that. I've been in the state for just over a year, and just traveling to Jackson and kind of just seeing where some of these schools are practicing, I mean, it's comparable to the likes of the ones you see in the heart of Memphis. And to see Jackson, which is, at least from my perspective, I think doing well economically, to see the public school system struggle as much as it has, especially, you know, at a school like Callaway, where they had to basically take over in terms of, you know, with everything going on there, just seeing the way that those things take place, it was something. Now getting right to your recruitment in high school, who was second behind Ole Miss in your recruitment?
I would have to say Southern Miss. Well, I would probably say a tie between Southern Miss and Mississippi State. I kind of dang it away. Actually, I'm telling a lie. My second thought was, other than football, if it was football, it would be Southern Miss. If it was basketball, it was Tennessee. That's the only other thing I wanted to do. I possibly was going to go play basketball at the University of Tennessee.
How much of a factor was negative recruiting back then, especially in terms of, you know, the stereotype of Ole Miss being a historically racist university?
Oh, that was the main thing. Like, say, Tennessee or Mississippi State or Southern Miss, that's kind of what they used against them. And I hear now, you know, recruit goes on. That's like one of the first things they're going to say. Like, you want to go up there to that racist school. Like, they don't want black people there. And, you know, that was the one of the schools that fought really hard for a black student not to go to school there. And, yeah, that's definitely something they use against Ole Miss big time, man. But, I mean, when I went, I felt the family atmosphere. I liked the coaches. I love the facility. There you go again with the resources. When I seen that coming from small Morton and then going to see those college campuses and seeing the resources, like the IPL, the whole thing, like the turf field, I had never seen that in high school before coming from Morton, you know. And I was like, man, this is somewhere I want to be, somewhere it's nice, you know, I want to be here, all the equipment and everything. Like, I came from nothing in Tibet and seeing those schools, and, you know, that just made me want to be there.
I understand how that stuff worked in the 80s, the 90s, but, man, like today in 2018, when at the Ole Miss that's here today, I don't even see how that kind of recruiting gains any traction at all. And yet I know that it probably does to some degree.
Oh, without a doubt it does. People going to use racism no matter what, man. Some harp on it more than others. And it's just a tactic to get into someone's head, because basically you're trying to recruit a kid. It's just like trying to get a girlfriend. If the other guy can say something bad about the other guy, you know, all it is about getting into someone's head. You know, if the kid want to believe it, or the parents want to believe it, they're going to believe it, you know. So anything you can throw out there negative, it's just the way of the world. It's just one of the things that Ole Miss has to fight, along with other schools, you know. But like I always tell them, back in the day, nobody wanted any black students to go to any of those universities. If you just look at it as a whole, you know, it blew up in the spotlight in the media with Ole Miss, because with James Meredith, you know. So it makes it look worse than probably what it was, or made it look like they was the only one that done it. But me just being open-minded to know, like, hey, back then it's just the way it was. Nobody wanted that to happen.
Right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. And negative recruiting, I mean, that's become an entirely different topic. I mean, it's just such a prevalent factor, no matter what it is that, you know, the schools are trying to use against, whether it be Ole Miss or Alabama or really any school in the country. Negative recruiting takes place. I mean, heck, even in the MAC, between Akron and Kent, it would take place up there back when I was covering them in Ohio. It's just become such a scare tactic almost, that some of these kids they respond to, and some of them are really turned off by.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Now, other than the negative recruiting aspect, what would you say are the three main differences in the recruiting process now than when you were in high school?
I would have to say with 7-on-7, that does a lot. You get to see kids live instead of watching a film, because sometimes your talent that you're playing against kind of tricks coaches. So seeing them live, or having someone there to see them live, if the college can't be there, I'm not sure of the rules. But yeah, with 7-on-7, they get to show like some of the guys that may not be known going up against some of the top guys, and that can help them. And you know, word travels, so that I think that helps with some kids getting recruited. Along with Huddle, you can find a gem on Huddle, be like, hey, I never heard of this kid, but look at his film. You know, back then we didn't have that. When I came out, you had to make your own film, or your coach had to make your film, the highlight film, and send it off to school. Now they could just access it and be like, you know, see for themselves without any extra work from a kid or a coach going out that way to, what, 119, I think, D1 schools, you know, and then not counting the other, you know, D2 and et cetera, you know. So that's another tool I think that helps. And just overall, the third thing I would say overall is just more people out here trying to find kids, you know, from 7-on-7 trying to find kids to be on your team, to just a lot of people just are into it. It's like the new wave of things to do. Maybe it was like that back then, but I think it's way bigger now than, say, 2006 when I came out, of trying to just find gems along anywhere, man, just anywhere you can find a kid. And I think it's more people out here trying to find those kids other than just college recruiters, you know, ranking services. I try really hard to find kids also. So I think those are three main differences now than then.
Would you say the increased exposure in terms of, you know, playing in 7-on-7 tournaments, playing in 7-on-7 teams, would you say that has helped the talent in the state of Mississippi begin to be recognized on these, you know, recruiting sites and everything like that? Or would you say it's more of just the bigger, faster, stronger growth side of things?
I would have to go with both. I would have to say a little bit of both. 7-on-7, without a doubt, I think it helps, because one of the hardest things to do is to get open when somebody knows you're going to pass the ball. And you're in less clothes, you can move more freely. And like I tell guys that try to do these little evaluating things, I tell them all the time, man, it's hard for a receiver to get open when you know it's a pass, you know, and then you know. And like, hey, he ain't finna try to come off and act like he's going to block. And I don't have to worry about the run at all as a DB. And I think both sides it helps, you know, because people think one-on-one is just an offensive drill, man. I've seen guys that can really cover, man, that will cover you up to one-on-ones if you don't, you know, use your fundamentals and everything with getting open and having just wide receiver savvy. What else? But just overall, I think it's helping everybody. Because to compete against another guy that's actually good, it's just always a good thing. It's just like kind of like what Saban said, good on good, man. When you got to compete every day or compete against somebody that's better than you or equal to you, it makes you better, you know, at the end of the day. So 707 to me is a big time thing for the state of Mississippi and is putting this on the map.
Do you plan to allow your kids at Provine to play next offseason?
Oh, yes. If they can grow, anything is going to help them get better, man. I always talk to them about perfecting their craft. So if you go to 707 and play against guys, some high caliber guys or some, you know, just some decent talent, you know, it's all about getting better every day. So, yeah, most definitely I would want them to play on any 707 team they can.
Now, do you see the pushback from the other high school coaches who are, you know, not vehemently against it, but, you know, they really seem to have a problem with the dynamics of 7-on-7 and kind of taking away, the power that the high school football head coaches would generally have in terms of their prospects, but they kind of lose when, especially in the offseason, when 7-on-7 coaches and trainers are really taking control of the situation?
I think more or less that coaches now that I'm a coach in high school, that it's more or less you worrying about your kids getting hurt. I think it's two factors. It's the way I look at it. It's two factors. I think they worry about them getting hurt, especially when they get closer to the season, the start, that they don't want their guys in it. Because, you know, in your season, you want your kids there and healthy, strong and healthy and ready to go to make it through a whole season. The second factor is I think there's a lot of trainers, coaches at 707 that are in it for the wrong reason. It's not to help the kids, it's more or less to help themselves by saying, hey, I got this kid, and claiming him as like you made him, like you just made him who he is and that nobody else helped him, and it's to boost your name up rather than helping that kid get to a college and you get nothing out of it. You know, I think that's more or less what's going on with a lot of high school coaches that are seeing that with certain people that are in the 707 fraternity, if you want to say. Just overall being in it for the right reason, because 707 is for them kids to get exposure, to take them to state, to see different talent, to see different, say if you take them to a visit to a college the day before your 707 games, you know, just to get them the experience, because some of them may not go to college, some of them may go JUCO, some of them may not play college ball at all. So, you know, just getting that experience, getting that exposure, and being in it for the right reasons. And that's the only way I can see a coach being, like, those are the only two reasons I can see a coach, like, really being against it.
Now, we kind of got into this argument a little bit when we were in Louisiana for a 7-on-7 tournament over the spring. Who do you think the best receiver in the state of Mississippi is for the class of 2019?
I like it. I changed my stance on that because I hadn't seen Mingo I didn't actually see his whole film. I came to the conclusion it's 1A and 1B between Dennis Jackson and Jonathan Mingo. Yeah, I don't put one in front of the other. You know, they both possess different skill sets. Then the other one, one's bigger and one's, I think, a little bit quicker, a little bit faster.
Which one are you saying is faster?
I think Dennis is a little faster, or if he's not a little faster, he's a little more explosive. I think Mingo is a little bit more physical, but also possesses the speed to take it to the crib on any catch he makes. I think Dennis is a little quicker. I think they both are pretty equal in route running. It was one, two of the most route savvy kids I've ever seen in high school. And I may be leaving someone out. I'm kind of going blank on the top receivers. Give me the top five.
You've got Mingo. You've got Jackson. You've got Jordan Jernigan at Tupelo. You've got Kevin Barnett at Oak Grove. Basically, after the top two, it drops down significantly. I was really just talking about between Mingo and Jackson.
Right, I would throw my little cousin in there. I'm going blank. I always call him J. Jaren Jones. I would throw him in there.
Oh yeah.
I put him in
three.
because seeing him progress and get better as a receiver, over 7-on-7 season, like he's pretty good. How he goes up and get the ball and catch those spectacular catches, because that's something you can't teach. Like that's just something that's got to be in you. So I would say those three. I would go with 1A and 1B with Jack Domingo and Dennis Jackson, and I would go with J-Dub as second, or if you want to call it third. But I do change my stance, because I was all Dennis at first. I was like, I've seen no one better in high school, but Jack Domingo is right there or better.
See, the thing with Dennis is Dennis is going to get in the weight room in college, and he's going to put on that muscle that he needs to put on, and he's going to be able to make those plays that he might not be able to make right now during his senior year at Summerall. And I think that's why so many people project him as highly as they do.
I agree. But honestly, I don't think he's going to get that much bigger. It's kind of like Calvin Ridley, you know, like he has that like thin-looking build. But I definitely know he's going to gain muscle, for sure. He's going to gain muscle. But I don't think he's going to just get that much bigger. I think his frame is just going to be what it is, you know, 5'10", 5'11". He's just going to be a speedster, man. And, you know, just his toughness will take on if he can go over the middle, you know, and make those tough catches in traffic, you know. But, yeah, I can project in him. That's who I see him as, the Calvin Ridley, man, up and down. Like, or like a Mike Wallace, but he's not as fast, but he's a better route runner, in my opinion. But, like, he's going to be that speed receiver type guy. Jonathan Mingo is going to be that more, I hate to use the word possession, but I would like to say he's going to be that more all-around, do-it-all guy that can take you deep, also catch a short pass and take it to the crease. So,
yeah,
that's my take on those two guys.
I can agree with you on that. Now, I'm really kind of wrapping up here. Sleepers in Mississippi. Obviously, it's kind of hard to sleep this close to the end of their senior year, but who do you think are players who are going to outperform their recruiting ranking when they get to college?
In the 2019 class?
Yeah, we'll do 2019, and then we'll do 2020.
You said receivers?
Or no, just in players? General. All over the field, no matter what position.
Oh, the guy that I think, I guess more or less you're asking like a sleeper that's on there? A sleeper?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, okay, here we go. Okay, and Tavius Willis from Velma Jackson High School. We just played him. I think that guy's a top five player that's not going to get his due diligence because of his stature. I want to put this. I coached him. Well, I didn't coach him. He was on our older team, and he played DB. But to see him play in 11-on-11 football at quarterback, man, that guy's a sleeper. And the only reason I think he's not going to get recruited like he should is his stature. He's only about 5'10", 5'9", 175, 85 pounds. But that guy's a football player. He doesn't project well. And I see it from a evaluation standpoint. You look at him like, what is he going to play in college? But as far as high school, and if somebody can get him and put him in the right spot, that dude will outperform his ranking. That whatever ranking he has right now, I think he doesn't even have a D1 offer right now. Another guy maybe in the 2019 class that will outperform their ranking. I don't think someone like Hakeem Bain. That's probably like a shocker, but just knowing, like, I think he's looked at the same way. I know it's a lot of guys in between there that I could probably talk about, but I would like to use him because I know about, how you want to say, projections. The guy is 6'2", about 205, 210, somewhere from there, 215 maybe. And he tests well. Those guys that test well in high school, that test well, period, those guys end up tapping into their ability in college and, like, really, really come out of nowhere. Like, he doesn't have a really high ranking. He's ranked and he got offered, but I don't think he's ranked where he should be once it all plays out, that's just me knowing that production, like, for example, and Tavis is production. Hakeem is more potential. And Tavis has 17 touchdowns in 3 games. I don't know if you know that. He probably got over 1,000 yards already. Hakeem, I don't think, has played as much due to injuries, but I just think once he gets in a college program and they – put on more weight, you know, and more skill set and more work, that he would turn out to be a sleeper that people are maybe sleeping on and not offering, and ends up being a good player and make it to the NFL most likely. So those are my two sleepers, and I know it's a lot of guys I may be leaving out, but those two guys that come to mind right off the bat.
I was expecting you to show some love to your player, Diamante Russell.
He's up there already in the rankings. In my opinion, from what I see, he's one of what, probably like the second or third defensive lineman. But, oh, for sure, he's one, for sure. Like, that guy there is a workaholic, man, the way he works in practice. And when he gains some weight, because he's only like 215, maybe right at 220, so without a doubt, he's one. But I can't call him a sleeper. He's ranked with like top 11, 12 in the state.
Yeah,
Tavius is way down the list, and Hakeem is like in the 30s on the ones I see, so I call those guys sleepers. You don't really know much about them, or they don't have like the offer you think they would have if you watch them in person or watch them from a potential standpoint. But Russell is All-American, unarmed All-American, and ranked like 12th in the state, so I can't call him a sleeper. But he's one of those guys that's going to be, hey, this is a guy right here that's going to make it to the next level, and most likely will make it to the next level and to the NFL if he can keep his head on straight and stay with the same working mentality that he has right now.
Yeah, I can agree with you with that on Russell. You're clearly not in the reporting industry with recruiting, because we have 4 stars and 5 stars ranked in the 20s who consider themselves slept on and underrated. So it's more of a matter of what, I guess, you think in terms of what's a sleeper than it is anything else. Now, are there any 2020 kids who have really caught your eye, either, you know, being a 7-on-7 coach this past year or coaching so far this year?
2020. I kind of get them mixed up. That would be the 11 Raiders, right?
Yes. Yeah, they're juniors right now.
Okay, let me see. I always get mixed up with the numbers. I mean, it's a few receivers, especially, E.J. Mason. I like him.
Is his name really Emery? Is his name really Emery? I see that all over Twitter and social media.
You know what? He wouldn't even tell me when I kept asking him. He just said EJ. I think I read it as Emery or something like that.
I don't know how I feel about covering a recruit with the same name as my daughter.
You know, it's one of those universal names, you know, like Shay. Shay is a girl name. So, you know, I can't talk.
Shay is definitely a girl's name.
Sure, I would say EJ Mason is one. Zeke from my school, Selman, the corner from my school, at Provine. Somebody caught my eye. I kind of get them mixed up because I had like 9th and 10th graders in the summer, which was going to be 10th and 11th graders. So I kind of get mixed up on who is what. And I hate to leave out guys. Let me see. I don't leave anybody out. Did I know? Well, okay, let's use the quarterback. I love Will Rogers as a quarterback. I'm at Brandon. That guy there is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's performed really well to start off the year. Obviously, Brandon lost their first game against Clinton this past week. But other than that, I mean, even in that game, Rogers has been able to make the plays to put the team in the position to win.
Man, if you ever coach that guy, you'll know why, man. He's a coach on the field. A lot of times in 7-on-7, I didn't have to call the plays. I just asked him what he wants. You know, what you like, what you feeling. And he would call it, and he'd go with it. He knew where to go with the ball. He's a student on the field, man. He's a stitching of the coach. Like, yeah, that's a big-time thing to have in a quarterback. He's really, really, really smart. He understands the game of football. His dad's a coach, and you can tell. You can really, really tell with that kid. So I'm very intrigued with him. He's a very smart kid. He's going to be real good. Those three guys come to mind off the bat. You know, EJ, Zeke, would you feel me? I can't pronounce his first name, Javoris, I think. He always tried to tell me how to pronounce it.
Your guess is better than mine.
And Will Rogers, but, go ahead.
I said your guess is better than mine in pronouncing his last name.
I don't know if Tulu is in the, going to the left. I think he's in the 10th.
From Philadelphia, right?
From Philly. Yes. Yeah, that kid there is something else. He's really good, really fast. He's very competitive. I think he's in the 10th grade, though. I think he's 2021. But that's another kid, you know. And there's a few more that I'm leaving out. I think he's from the coast. He goes to Biloxi. I like that kid. He's a DB.
I
just can't remember his name. Yeah. Jervin is his name. Jervin Smith, that's his name. I love him, too. He's really good. I'm kind of mixing up 10th grade with 11th grade, so sorry about that. For sure, Brandon Buckhalter. That left him with the Dallas and played. But
kid,
I think he's in 10th grade, so I'm kind of mixing it up from 2021
to
2020, so my bad.
You're good. Now, last question.
Let me mention my last one since I mentioned 10 grads. I got to go with my guy, Deion Smith, that's that program with me. Another kid, 6'2 receiver that's going to pop up on the map to a lot of people. He's 6'2, about 175, run like a little deer, possesses the jump ball ability, can get deep, teaching him how to run routes better. He's going to be one of the top kids in Mississippi 2 at receiver, but I think he's 2021 also.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. Now, wrapping things up, you know, what's your long-term path in coaching? Do you see yourself, you know, wanting to end up on a college staff, or do you see yourself kind of wanting to mold the kids kind of like you are now in the Jackson Public School System for the near future?
My overall goal is to be a college coach, a receiver coach, and one day possibly an OC at a college. You know, for now, I'm just trying to mold my kids and make them the best they can be at the high school ranks, teach them the game of football, which is the game of football, teaches them the game of life because of adversity. Things are not going to go your way. It's going to be real tough. you got to grit your teeth. You got to take it. You know, you got to man up. You can't run from it. And football teaches you that because some people are going to come and they're going to bust you in the mouth. And you're going to want to fight against your teammates saying, hey, you ain't doing your job, but it's all about coming together. So, you know, just molding my kids, man, right now and teaching them and making them the best they can be and just progressing myself along with those guys into where I want to ultimately be. Because when I was in college, all I did was a big thing that I did was I used to always look in the media guys and I would look at my coaches' bios and see where they'd been, where they started out at. And was in high school, they jumped immediately to the college ranks. You know, where did they go before they was my coach? And what did they do as a player? Or, you know, who did they coach? I was so intrigued by that, and that was something that I wanted to do. And you know, I'm just writing my story now. You know, the guys I'm coaching now and where I'm starting out at program, and I was volunteering at Morton High School, volunteering them 707 ranks, you know, and just paying my dues and just learning, man. And I want to ultimately end up in college. I don't want to go to the NFL. I have to say that right off the bat. I don't want to be an NFL coach. I want to ultimately end up in college at a D1 school, a big D1 school, and, you know, submit my legacy there as a coach.
And no doubt. Shay, I really appreciate the time today for joining us on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. We'll definitely
No problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we'll link up again soon.
All right, then, man.
Our thanks to Shay Hodge. We'll get back to the rebelgrove.com questions and wrap those up here in just a minute. But first, let me tell you, this podcast is also brought to you by State Farm agent Wally Morgan. If you've maybe you've cut out the lattes, you've put in those curly Q light bulbs, brown bagged your lunch to work, but it still feels like payday keeps getting here a day or two late, a few $100 short, give State Farm agent Wally Morgan a call and tell him you'd like a free discount double check. It's a line-by-line review of your car insurance policy to make sure you're getting the discounts you deserve, like 10% for being a good driver, another 10% if your teenage driver happens to be a good student, 17% for simply combining your car and home policies. Add all those State Farm discounts up, and it's pretty easy to see how you could be saving hundreds of dollars a year. So get started today by giving State Farm agent Wally Morgan in New Albany, Mississippi, a call at 662-539-7062. Because being there to help keep more of your money in your pocket is why he's here. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Discounts may vary state to state. All right, Russell, we've been going almost an hour, so we'll go quick through some of these. I'm not going to ask what you ask about Eddie O.
Oh, goodness. You should hear some recruits give their impersonation of Orgeron.
Yeah, I can imagine. Who's the target that Ole Miss has picked up momentum with?
Picked up momentum with? I would say it'd be, you know, Jalen Wertemeyer, the tight end from Texas, from Dickinson, who spent quite a bit of time on the Ole Miss campus this summer. He was not really, obviously the tight end wasn't overly involved on Saturday in their win, but the performance of the team kind of caught his eye and look for him to be in Oxford sooner than later. Other than that, you had Bill Norton from the Memphis area. He goes to Christian Brothers, committed to Georgia. There's been growing speculation that Georgia's not going to have room for both him and Zion Logue. So one of those two are going to need a place to go. And keep it real here, Ole Miss finished second place for both kids. So with that, Ole Miss is obviously going to get back in the picture with either one of those defensive linemen when the time comes.
Let's look at this replay. He's off. All right, widely reported, City Reb says, a little commentary in here, widely reported that this is the deepest year ever for talent Mississippi, yet Ole Miss only has three of the top 20 committed. How many do you expect Ole Miss to end up with? And why is, in his opinion, Luke struggling so much in-state when the administration sold him as Mississippi made and recruiting Mississippi was supposed to be one of his strengths? You've touched on some variation of this 1,000 times, but what are your thoughts as of today?
Well, let's make it 1,001, I guess. You know, he says three of the top 20, but also that three of the top 20 is three of the top 8 in the state. And yes, all of those players are on the offensive side of the ball. And then also with the amount of talent the state has this year, which won't become a regularity, at least looking at the class of 2020 and getting a first glance at 2021, the talent has made early commitments to out-of-state schools. I mean, you've got Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Georgia, Auburn again, Arkansas, Florida State. Florida State's – they're trying to build – not just a small little journey from Tallahassee to Mississippi. They're trying to build a full-on pipeline. And despite Taggart's results on the field, Taggart has been able to sell quite a bit to the recruits in state of Mississippi, including Derek Hall, who many had thought was, you know, leaning towards Auburn, just took his official to Florida State, which wasn't fully expected, especially with everybody thought his – decision was imminent for Auburn despite not taking an official there. But sorry, getting back, you said you wanted to be quick. So struggling with the top 20, I mean, some of these top 20 kids, they have, whether it be grade problems, off the field problems, certain people attached to their recruitment who might not be fully on Ole Miss's side, things like that. And
who could that be?
There's several. One of them actually ended up on a JUCO staff last week.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Shocking.
It is. But these early commitments to out-of-state schools, especially, you know, looking at Jamon Gordon from Meridian, he was previously committed to Ole Miss. And, you know, I would also list him as someone who Ole Miss is gaining momentum with. I don't know if it's exactly public in terms of, you know, Gordon being vocal about it. But, yeah, there's definitely been some momentum picked up there in the past, I'd say, 2 or 3 weeks.
Who's the final defensive lineman in this class?
Final defensive lineman? You're asking me to predict?
I'm not asking you to predict. Naples Believer is asking you to predict.
I guess I'll take a shot.
I'm still very upset at you about some of your comments regarding the Chargerettes. I'm not asking you to predict anything. I've already told you. I've given you a prediction.
I'm going with I think Byron Young ends up at Ole Miss. I think the one I just talked about, Jamon Gordon, I think he ends up back at Ole Miss. Obviously, you know, you're shifting Sam Williams from Northeast. He's listed as a linebacker, and I still think he ends up playing linebacker if Ole Miss runs the 3-4 next year. But currently, with the way everything's set up in the 4-2-5, he is exactly what you're looking for in terms of a pass rushing defensive end. So we're going to project him on the defensive line as well. And then you've got Patrick Lucas. I mean, the defensive line class is going to be smaller than it was last year, but it's also not going to be as devoid in talent, I guess you could say. The talent in last year's class on the defensive line and at linebacker was not as good as it will be in the class of 2019.
Swag for Heisman says, is N'Kobe Dean a must-get for Matt Luke in your eyes, as in, if Luke does not sign him, it is a failure on Luke as a coach?
I'm sure Swag for Heisman was listening to this podcast and really getting hopeful that we were going to get to his question, and as were several other people on the site. This question, it becomes, what's your definition of must-get? Because if that's your definition of must-get, there's no target in any recruiting class that is going to make it a failure on the head coach or the decision to hire a head coach, whether it be a 4-star linebacker from Horn Lake or a three-star linebacker from Oxford Tech, or you could say Grenada. But with that, N'Kobe Dean is a critical get for Ole Miss and the staff, and they were able to get him on campus again this weekend. They won't be able to this weekend. Nobody's really going to be able to get anybody from Horn Lake on campus this weekend because they're heading to Shreveport. They're playing Washington, a school from Oklahoma. But anyways, about Dean being a must-get and Luke not signing him, there are other options at linebacker. Ole Miss has Eric Jeffries committed. Ole Miss has Sam Williams committed. There's still a slight possibility with Levante Bentley. But is N'Kobe Dean the number one target on the board overall, regardless of position? Yes. Is Matt Luke, the head coach, a failure if he doesn't sign him? No. Does the person who's recruiting that territory, who adds yet another mishap and failure, recruiting failure on his resume, does that kind of, could that be the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of his employment? Yes.
So much salt. All right, just real quick, you can answer this one yes, no. Does Scotty Phillips' season affect the recruitment of Eric Gray?
Yes.
Okay, so Saturday was a good day.
Yes.
We're not on top 2020 right now because we're up over an hour. We'll get to 2020 next time. Who's the most, besides N'Kobe Dean, who's the most important must-get in this class?
Eric Gray, running back from Lausanne.
I think I agree with that. Matter of fact, I know I do. With the first, Bro Ballas says, with the first home game weekend upcoming and no news on the appeal, what is the coaching staff's strategy in regards to the unofficial visit restriction? If it is upheld, does it go into effect immediately, or is it now delayed another year? If immediately, what happens to recruits? That's a really good question, and frankly, it's a question that we've got to talk to some people about. I need to ask some of those questions of Ross Bjork and some other people, unless you happen to know the answers.
I know the answer to the question about during the appeal. Recruits can visit as much as they want until the appeal.
That's why they're trying to get them all here now.
Yeah.
It's not because, hey, Southern Illinois is going to be a great game. It's because they want to get them on campus in case next week's the week.
Right. And
I don't know whether it's an immediate thing. The moment it comes down.
Oh, it is. The moment
the appeal comes down, it goes into effect that moment.
Yeah.
So if it comes down on Friday afternoon and kids have been planning to come tomorrow, they can't come.
That's right.
Wow. Okay. I did not know that.
And that's why so many people are, you know, conspiracy theorists are talking about it happening the day before the Alabama game. And there's well over, I don't know, five dozen or four dozen kids who are expecting to visit Ole Miss for the Alabama game, both basketball and football. I think we'll touch more on basketball next week because they've got a pretty big visit weekend for the Alabama game, which isn't affected at all by any of this, obviously.
Charger Rebel asks, how much attention do recruits pay to the negative stuff every fan base does on Twitter?
Not much. Not much. Unless they're putting their name in their mouth, kind of like what happened with a couple Ole Miss fans and Fabian Lovett last year. Other than that, you know, if they're just, you know, talking and kind of leaving the read between the lines in for, you know, the fans to read into or other people to read into, it's really not that much that they look at. I mean, do they see when these fans are tweeting at them and everything? Yeah, and some kids love it and retweet every one of them. And other kids are more, I don't know how to say this the right way, humble about it, and they're not going to push the retweet button every time some fan base mentions them on Twitter or talks about how important it is for so-and-so to end up in Alabama's 2032 class. There was a question somewhere about the backup quarterbacks and if it's possible currently to recruit quarterbacks and them not be afraid. Not afraid. Let's keep it real here. Nick Saban is the way he is right now because he doesn't want Jalen Hurts to transfer. He's kissing his ass any chance he gets to. And that's become quite a problem. Kind of like what
Well, he's transferred.
That's what Shea was kind of doing with Mingo and Jackson because he's coached both of them and has good relationships with both of them. People are afraid that if you put one above the other, whether it be on a depth chart where you finally remove the word or if you're, you know, just in a conversation and saying, yeah, Tua's better than Jalen. Yeah, Jordan's better than Matt. Those kind of things create conversations that some people don't want to have. And that's become such a problem, especially in recruiting, where, you know, Ole Miss has Grant Tisdale committed, yes. Is Grant Tisdale going to compete with Matt Corral currently the way the class stands next spring? You're damn right he is. Does Corral have the higher leg up on the competition because, number one, he's there and he knows the current offense? Absolutely. Does that mean that Tisdale's been told he's going to be the starter the moment he walks on campus? No. No promises are made or should be made in that regard in recruiting. And when that happens, that's when you see programs who don't normally land highly rated recruits get those highly rated recruits.
I'm going to give Charger Rebel the last question because I think it's a good one and we can both answer it. Let's use John Chavis as an example, he said. Does he lose any kind of credibility with the kids he was targeting at Texas A&M and is now targeting at Arkansas? It seems like it would seem very disingenuous if he was telling a player how much he would love College Station and yada, yada, and now is saying the same thing about Fayetteville and Arkansas. These are professional salespeople. They're very good at it, and they're dealing with kids. And to these kids, and I've said this before, to these kids, they go on these visits and they go to, let's say, College Station, and they go to Fayetteville, and they go to Oxford, and they go to Tuscaloosa, and they go to Baton Rouge, and they go to Norman, just throwing stuff out. Go to Waco. All the facilities are great. They're high school kids. To a high school kid, all the facilities look awesome. All the stadiums are cool. All the uniforms are cool. They put on the uniforms and they take the pictures and it's awesome, right? There's just no differentiation. They end up making decisions, the legit decisions, based on people. So, yeah, does the kid for a minute think, yeah, Coach Chavis was, yeah, but you said all this same stuff about A&M. What does he say in response to that? Well, A&M's great. But this is greater. It's a better fit for you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, they're like you said, they're trained professional salesmen. When P.J. Fleck left Western Michigan and took the job at Minnesota, he caught up every one of those commitments that he had, well, at least the ones that he felt were talented enough to play in the Big Ten. And he made the sales pitch within hours. He had commitments flipped from Western Michigan to Minnesota. So, I mean, does it play a role, especially, you know, like he's saying, John Chavis? I would say Bradley Dale Pavito, or however you pronounce his name, the linebacker coach at A&M, who was at Ole Miss for a year. He and Dean had developed quite a relationship, which led to Dean actually visiting Texas A&M this summer. Do you think Dean is hesitant to potentially play for a linebacker coach who left one SEC West job for another? Sure. Do other factors play a role in the being that Texas A&M likely isn't going to be a factor in Dean's recruitment? Yeah. But like you said, these coaches, they're trained. They know what's going on. They know, like, they can talk to the kids. Now, getting the parents to understand the concept of a business is a lot easier to do than kids.
Yeah, for sure. No disagreement at all. All right, we're going to wrap it up there. We've been going if I can do my math right, about an hour and 12, hour and 13 minutes is probably, yeah, he caught it. That's probably plenty. As we tape this, Atlanta's leading Boston 2-1 in the fourth. This game will be long over by the time you hear this podcast, but hope you enjoyed this episode of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Remember, billyspecans.com. Again, our thanks to Shea Hodge. For Russell Johnson, I'm Neil McGrady. We'll be back with you next week. We'll talk Ole Miss Alabama weekend, get some basketball recruiting news to you as well. So until then, take care.